everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the life we lead and the books we write and how these two are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, please go to pnwa.org. Well, today I could really call my show not just Author to Author, but Author to Author to Author, because I am joined by not one, but two lovely guests. Speaking about Susan Wingate and Joshua Graham, both best-selling authors in their own right, and both co-hosts of the excellent Blog Talk radio show, Dialogue Between the Lines, another great writing online radio show, a show I had the good fortune to be a guest on about almost a year ago now, and I am just delighted to be able to return the favor and have both Joshua and Susan on the show with me now. So Joshua, Susan, welcome to Author to Author.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you so much
for having us,
for joining me. Maybe we can begin by, for some of our listeners who aren't familiar with your work, Susan, you are the author of six published books. What are we up to right now?
Something like that.
And they are generally, in the loose terms, sort of women's fiction. I know that Bobby's Diner was sort of your breakout book, wasn't it? And that was a love story of sorts.
It was my breakout book, and that book, that series has three books in it, Bobby's Diner, Hotter Than Helen, and Sacrifice at Sea. Hotter Than Helen will be released sometime this fall, and Sacrifice at Sea will be out at the beginning of 2013, but yeah, women's fiction. I would say that would be very good.
Loosely, because we don't want to discourage any men out there who would also enjoy these books. You know, I read lots and lots of books because of the work I do here on Author. Many of them categorized cleanly and firmly in women's fiction, and I always enjoy them. It really doesn't matter. Fiction is fiction. So it gets called that, but really, if you like a good story, I say pick up one of Susan's books for sure.
Oh, thank you so much. And some of my best fans are men who have commented quite nicely about the story. So, and if we think about women's fiction, one of the greatest women's fiction authors out there is Ian McEwan. So I think it's safe to say that men enjoy women's fiction as well.
They do. And Joshua, you write suspense fiction, although I guess it has kind of its own little twist to it. Your most recent book is Dark Room. Is that? Yes, Dark Room. And how's that going?
That's right.
And,
it's going
and
great.
So for our listeners who haven't had a chance to try the waters of Joshua Graham fiction, what would they be finding if they pick up Dark Room?
Well, Dark Room is kind of a political thriller, and it's got elements of history in it, too, because it deals a lot with the backstory with the Vietnam War and a conspiracy to cover up certain things that had happened during that time. But what's interesting is that my thrillers, my suspense books, they usually follow your typical genre expectations, but then I throw in a little twist of the supernatural into it. So I would kind of describe it like, for example, Beyond Justice is a legal thriller, but it's got a little kind of a Stephen King or Dean Koontz twist in it. A little bit of that in Dark Room, where it might be something that it's got some narrative that would remind you of an Amy Tan book, but it would also have the political intrigue of maybe a Vince Flynn book, and then just a little tweak of Dean Koontz in there. So it's a little bit of everything there. But these are some of my favorite genres. So,
you know, that's just excellent. And it's so good to hear you trying to describe what your book is, because, and I say this to, you know, one of the first challenges writers face, and being a member of the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, we see this all the time, is because we are trying to help new authors find agents and publishers and so on. And one of the first challenges they have is they don't know what they write. First, they all think they write literary fiction, apparently, and then eventually some keep writing literary fiction, and then some discover they're actually writing romance or suspense or mystery and so on. But and that's all very well and good to market yourself. You have to be able to identify the basic genre, so the, you know, if the agent represents it and so on. But as I listen to you talk about your work, and as I listen to Susan talk about her work, what is clear to me, and which I, and what I think all writers need to remember, is you are first and foremost a storyteller, and then you tell the story, and then you figure out what it is and how you will sell it. Wouldn't you agree, Susan?
Absolutely. I think we have to fall in love with the work first before we even worry about how we're going to market it, because if we're too involved in how we're going to market it while we're writing, it's not going to come off as a very well-told story. So I totally agree with leaving the publishers and the publicity publicists and the agents out of your office while you're writing, and just let yourself write and be free to create.
I love that. Keeping the agents and editors out of your office when you write, I think that's absolutely important, because no matter what, they aren't there. But I don't want to put words in your mouth, Joshua. There are writers who think about the market, who are very strategic about it. Not many, but a few. Were you someone who said, I just want to tell these kinds of stories and then I'll figure them out? Or did you have an eye on the market before you sat down to write your the fiction that you would go on to publish?
Well, I mean, I see that writing is a business. It's an art, but it's also a business. And so I'd be foolish to completely ignore market expectations if I want to be successful in the market. And on the other hand, I don't go the other extreme and only write to the market and don't think about artistic integrity. So I try to get a good balance of that. I mean, you really hit the nail on the head when you talked about, you know, what genres are and how they are really labels for, like, the sales team to tell, like, you know, Barnes & Noble which section they're going to put the book on which shelf. But sometimes if you've been in the bookstores, you'll see that some of these books are in the strangest places anyway. For example, I mean, The Time Traveler's Wife, is that science fiction? Is that romance? Is that or Stephen King's most recent book, is that science fiction? Is that horror? Is that what is it? But the bottom line is, these are great stories, and these labels are primarily for the categorization for sales and marketing. However, from the author's point of view, I do think it is important to know the genre that you're, even if you're not in that genre specifically or exclusively, you know, have a basis, a foundation. So if you're going to be breaking out of this genre, which I kind of think Darkroom breaks out of political thrillers, you know, quite a bit, but you still want to have some basic elements. Otherwise, you know, your readers won't know how to enjoy your book. So whether you cross genres, break genres, you need to master the genre first before you try any of that.
So what I'm hearing, and I've heard this from a lot of writers, is you're saying, when you talk about market awareness, and I assume what you mean by that is, and you just sort of outlined that a little bit in your last answer, is, look, I like suspense novels. I enjoy reading them. I think I would enjoy writing them. Let me figure out what most suspense novels do. What is the pace at which they're told? How are the conflicts resolved? Because there are certain patterns that show each other again and again and again. Let me learn that form, just like any writer must learn the basic form of what makes a story, of what makes a beginning, middle, and end, and what a character is, and so on. You're saying, let me learn that form, and then I will see how I want to, if you don't have any ideas right out of the gate, some writers do, but if I have, then let me learn how I want to expand it and move out from there. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am.
Okay. How about you, Susan? Did you begin somewhere sort of genre-wise, or did you just have a story, just a basic story you wanted to tell, and you were going to figure it out afterwards?
Right. Well, I think, you know, I totally agree with what Joshua said. I also think that, you know, like you said, we write what we read. I read a lot of everything, so I tend to want to write a lot of everything. And there's a great difference between mainstream and literary fiction and commercial fiction, like science fiction and thrillers and mystery and romance. We tend to be on two sides of the coin. with literary fiction, we're dealing with character-driven novels. So we're thinking in their arc, their character arc throughout the story, and less so in the action of the story, which we do with more plot-driven novels such as mysteries and romance and science fiction and thrillers. But they're both so much fun to write. It's hard to stay out of any you know, commercial fiction entirely. I find myself falling into those categories every once in a while. And it, thoroughly enjoying it because it's a different stretch in my creativity where I have to think about, okay, what's going to happen now as far as action goes versus where is the development in my character's life right now? Where are they mentally? Where are they emotionally?
Right.
Are they high? Are they low? You know, what is their development? Are they at the peak of just total frustration? Whereas with, you know, and that being the climax, that psychological issue being the climax, with plot-driven novels, we're dealing more with an action or an event happening as the climax. So we need to really distinguish between those two, I think, when we're talking about the market and selling.
Joshua, Susan mentioned wanting to sort of push yourself artistically, and you said of Darkroom that this is beginning to branch out for you in new directions. When you start thinking of your next project, do you feel within yourself, even though you may not know specifically what it is you're going to, where you're going to grow next, do you feel within yourself before you begin the desire not just to tell a story, but to tell something different, to the desire within yourself to feel it grow as you write, or does that just happen organically?
It does a little bit of both, because I like to kind of describe it as planning for it to grow organically. And okay. By that, what I mean is I could maybe just describe the two different concepts of, say, the Big Bang Theory. I mean, you know,
okay.
It's just like when that happens, just things spontaneous. And I emphasize the word theory. When that happens, you know, things just kind of happen on their own. Now, the other idea would be like cultivating, you know, a garden. I mean, these things grow, but they have to be watered. They have to be planted in the right place. You have to consider the season. You have to consider the amount of sunlight, the quality of the light. And when you have planted everything according to the best of your knowledge, then they can grow on their own. And by that's kind of how I see it organically. It's not just free form of just writing free association and coming up with something. I mean, I tried that when I was younger, and it was fun, and I came up with some really wacky short stories that were entertaining to me, at least. But
right.
When it comes to writing, you know, something that's saleable, marketable, or even cohesive as a novel, I've really come to the point where I don't outline, like, laboriously, but I do come up with, you know, some general structure
right.
to give the seed of my story the optimal growing environment in which it can develop. And then there are times where when it's developing, I start to wonder, well, where exactly is this supposed to go? And then I kind of retrace back to, what was I trying to say with this book? What was, is there a message? Or where was this character supposed to go by the end of the book? If it doesn't come to me intuitively, I just refer back to my blueprints again. And sometimes
right.
that gets me back on track, or it will take me in a new direction that I didn't realize I was actually going until I got to this point.
So birds of a feather. I know for a fact that Susan really learned how to write a novel for herself when she learned that she was indeed an outliner, and that prior to that, it was very difficult, and that the outlining made it much easier. That's my memory of our last time we spoke. Isn't that true, Susan?
Yes, although of late, and that's totally true, Bill, totally true. I wouldn't have been able to finish my first novel had I not started. My first novel was Of the Law, and Michael Collins helped me with that. And if he hadn't held my hand through that novel writing, I don't think I ever would have finished a novel at all. But it was afterward, through, of course, my learning, and this is another incredible part of writing. We should never stop reading about how to write or books on writing. Through that journey with Michael, I was reading a lot of how to write, of course, And I found that there was this overarching form to any novel, and started writing it out and filling in this blank piece of paper, which built into a form and an outline. It came from that, and it evolved. And so from that outline, I wrote my very second novel, and that one I wrote rather quickly. The first one took about 10 years. The second one was about 4 months. And then I figured that worked. So,
yes.
I mean, anything that comes out that fast and easy, I thought wasn't going to be any good, but it received several awards and sold quite well.
Oh, no, sometimes the easiest, actually, it's easy for a reason.
Yeah, isn't that something? And it was wonderful. And since then, I've outlined. But this last novel that I'm working on, or this most recent project, I'm trying to not think in form. I'm thinking more toward just pantsing it, which is a lot of fun, and it is a very creative process doing it that way.
Well, you know, my guess is you will be able to do it if you're ready to do it, because sometimes you teach yourself so intrinsically what a story is that you're really outlining almost in your brain, and you don't understand it. And Joshua, I wanted to say something. You used the term gardening, and I'm so glad you used that, because I've recently been thinking about writing in those terms myself. I don't outline at all, but I've tried it, and it just doesn't work for me. But what I understand that I do, and gardening is exactly the metaphor I use, I create within me an environment that is receptive to creative energy. And the environment has the quality of stillness, always stillness. And into that stillness comes that which I translate into a story. Now, this sounds very mystical, I understand. But it was very important for me to learn this, to know that I mentally can't create a story, but I can hear it, listen to it, and translate it, and know when it's working. I can know when it's working. That I do know for sure. But I don't know what makes a story. But I do know that I receive it and translate it. And so I'm wondering, Joshua, when you've outlined your story, every single writer I've ever talked to, no matter whether they outline or not, there is that quality at some point during their writing of receiving, of hearing, of listening. Sometimes it's a character. Sometimes it's a change in a storyline that they didn't anticipate. When does that moment happen for you?
It happens at various times. Some of them are romantic, you know, as one would think of a writer, like, oh, in a flash of inspiration, he was sitting under the tree, and the muse came and kissed him on the ear, and, you know, it's something like that. And other times I'll be, like, in the shower, and it's like, oh, and my wife says, what? I just got
the
it.
The shower is
so,
a very creative
really
place.
Depends.
I've had a lot of epiphanies in there. It is. The warm running water, I don't know what it is. So sometimes it just comes to you in the day, right?
Because, you know, you know, the writer's mind is constantly thinking. That's why friends of writers have gotten used to that far-off stare that cats do when they're in the litter box. But what we're doing, instead of what the cats are doing, we're actually composing in our head at a very deep level. But, you know, the thing about outlining is that I don't do huge outlines, like, from beginning to end in every single chapter, because I have nothing against it. I just don't have the fortitude to do that. However, I usually start in very large strokes, like act one, act two, act three. What are the main things that happen? And then I start writing, and sometimes I'll just, like, you know, build my bridge to the next step. And then, you know, so at least I have an idea of where I'm going, and telling myself that I'm fully free to go anywhere I want if I don't want to go here. But at least if I aim in a direction, you know, for the next maybe five chapters until the next big event in this particular part, then I have a lot more confidence. So I'm doing it at a smaller level, I think, what full outliners do, but I give myself some breathing room and the ability to just take it in without getting overwhelmed.
Yes, you know, I've interviewed hundreds of writers now, and there are always that divide between the outliner and the non-outliner, but it's actually the rarer writer who's a thorough outliner. Most writers do none at all, or they do a kind of loose outline and they change it all the time. So, Susan, I want to ask you guys both this question. I'm going to start with you. And I think this is a word that has a lot of meanings for a lot of different people, but I think it's a necessary quality to, I think, leading a full life and certainly a creative life. And that word is faith. So what does that word mean to you when you hear faith?
Faith?
Faith.
My faith?
No,
First of all,
you can say your faith or just the word faith, whether it's yours or...
Yeah, the word faith resonates with me spiritually and in my faith in Jesus Christ. So as my faith and faith directs me, it's all about the end result and how I'm going to glorify him. And so that is what faith means to me. As a writer, I can't do anything without my faith in Jesus Christ. So it kind of is circular, I know, but that's how I feel.
For you, it feels like a starting place.
It feels like everything.
Right. And Joshua, what does that word mean to you?
Well, I want to ditto what Susan said because I share the same faith. And, it's not just a starting point because the faith that we share is it's about eternity, and it's something infinite. So there really is no beginning, no end, no middle in this story. I think story is just trying to take capture a bit of what we have faith in, that is in God and in all things that have happened to me. My particular faith is that God is outside of time, or that time is in his hands, if you can imagine how we see time as a linear set of events that, you know, past, present, future. It's all in his hands. And so faith for me, the definition that I take from the Bible is the substance of things not seen but hoped for. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. And this is, to me, the writing process is all about faith. It takes faith to be able to see the end from the beginning, that you will be able to tell this story and resonate, from the moment you conceive the idea to the day it's on the printed page. And it also, having faith, it permeates in one's writing because, you know, you have to have confidence in, not only as a writer, but as a reader. You open a book and you're about to commit to like 400 pages or so. If you are going to do that, it's going to take some faith on your part that this writer can deliver. This person's going to tell a story that it's going to be worth my time, whether it's like, you know, 2 weeks or a month or 24 straight hours of reading, it's going to be worth it. And you as a reader put a lot of faith in that writer. So I want, as a writer, to be able to justify that faith. And I'm always thinking about, like, you know, let me do this justice. Let me do God justice, because I believe he's the one who gave me the ability to write, and let me not misrepresent him in my writing or that not. There's a passage in the Bible that says that, you know, that God is the author and perfecter of our faith. So I just think it all ties in perfectly.
Yeah.
That way.
You know, it's a great word, and I think it's and whatever your religious beliefs are, and, you know, of course, there's a whole spectrum out there, it's such an important word in a way. It occurred to me, I learned a while ago for myself that I could not choose what I loved. I couldn't choose who I loved, and I couldn't choose what I loved to do. I really couldn't. That was essentially comes to me. But I did have the power to choose whether to follow it or not. And if I followed it, the way was easy. And if I didn't follow it, the way was hard. But I was free to do either one. I was completely free to not follow what I loved or not. But I had to come to terms, and the part of my mind, of course, wants to be in complete control. But I'm not actually in control of what comes to me that I love. You know, that sort of seems to be delivered to me. And as a writer, you know, you must have faith that that which comes to you, which, and I only want to write what I love, is of value. But you can't, I can't change it. You know, I can't change what comes to me. And I have to have faith that it has value because I sense it within me. You know, and it feels like love, of course. And then I just try to, then I am what I think of as a translator. Ultimately, just a translator. And it was, and I, even though I myself have never been in church, I have, when I realized that how much faith was required to do what I do, it did change my relationship to the work significantly, really. And so, did you guys, now, let's see, Joshua, you're calling me from California somewhere.
California.
And
yeah.
Susan, you are here in the Pacific Northwest with me. How did you two meet one another and form this this radio team?
You want to talk about that, Joshua?
Oh, no. Why don't you go ahead, Susan?
Okay. Well, on my first book tour, I traveled down through Washington, Oregon, and ended up in California in Beverly Hills to talk with a film producer. And on my way, in Lincoln City, Oregon, I met Dean Wesley Smith, and he knew of me, and he said, you know, we started talking, and he had these classes that he was giving, again, constantly learning about writing and working as a writer. And so this one particular year, October of 2009, I went, and Joshua Graham was there as well, and we enjoyed each other's writing, although there wasn't a lot of time to talk. It was like a boot camp crash course, just 2 weeks of solid, nonstop writing meetings and work, after which we got together and started this, outside of that learning experience, a friendly relationship via the phone and Skyping and that sort of thing, emailing, and one thing led to another, and now we have a wonderful working relationship where I consider Joshua one of my very best friends, and I just enjoy our camaraderie thoroughly.
Well, that's just awesome, and you've been doing the show now for how long?
It'll be 2 years
October. Right?
Yeah. 2 years, yeah, in October.
So maybe, Joshua, maybe you can talk about, you know, obviously there are certain promotional, you know, platform and so on, benefits to having your own blog talk radio show. But aside from all that, how is the what have you gained from doing the radio show?
Well, I don't really know exactly how much that helps promote myself or Susan, because usually in the show we're bringing in other authors and we're helping them promote them.
Right.
But I would say my own direct benefit is I've learned a lot. Susan and I have spoken with authors and film writers and agents, mostly authors, and at all different levels. Some of them who are starting, beginning writers and emergent writers, and some of them New York Times bestsellers. And in fact, this coming fall, we'll have people like Sandra Brown and David Morrell and hopefully Lee Child. So
awesome.
It's a huge benefit to me to be able to speak with them. And we spoke with Lincoln Child. We spoke with Steve Berry and Frank Peretti. And just hearing them talk about their experience and getting to know them over the phone, our show is very laid back and friendly, very much like this show. And, establishing relationships. When I went to New York in July to Thriller Fest, I got to meet some of them for the first time in person, but right. I had already gotten to know them through the radio show, so it was great being able to go shake hands with Steve Berry and take a picture with Doug Preston and basically learn. And they are such generous and kind people that we've been in contact with. So that's been really edifying for me, and I know it's been for Susan as well, that we can be in touch with them and learn from them and just hear from their experiences. And plus, once in a while, we get advanced reader copies, and it's a real privilege. I've got Justin Cronin's next book, The 12, here, and a few others, too. So,
well, that's just awesome. And, it's a great show. Keep up the good work. Guys, I can't believe it, but we're out of time. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Bill. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, thank you. Take it easy. Yes, do check out the show, Dialogue Between the Lines. In the meantime, well, thanks for listening. This was a great little chat we had. Be sure to join us next week when I am joined by Kirby Larson. Kirby Larson will be with me. Until then, do what you love, and you really can't go wrong. It's a true story. Well, my music won't play. Isn't that a shame? Well, I'll have to say goodbye. Goodbye, everybody.